You know that feeling when the professional house cleaners have like just packed up and left your home?
Oh, it is the best feeling in the world.
Right. You walk through the front door and the air smells subtly like citrus or pine or whatever they
Like
use.
the signature clean smell.
Exactly. And you look down and see those incredibly satisfying, perfectly parallel vacuum lines on the living room rug.
Those lines are basically therapy.
They totally are.
Yeah.
You walk into the kitchen. And the counters are so clear, they actually seem to bounce the light differently. For a brief shining moment, there's this, universal sense of profound peace.
Like your life is completely in order.
Right. You feel like you've got everything figured out. But then, almost inevitably, we all experience the exact same frustration. That beautiful magazine cover house stays pristine for exactly 48 hours.
It's the great 48-hour countdown.
Yeah. And then, almost like a slow-moving tide, the chaos just starts creeping back in.
It really does. I mean, you set your mail down on the dining table on Tuesday. A single coffee cup gets left beside the sink on Wednesday morning. A pair of shoes doesn't quite make it into the closet. And suddenly, that pristine illusion just shatters completely.
It's gone.
The peace evaporates, and you are left feeling like keeping a house clean is this impossible all-or-nothing game where you are just constantly
I
losing.
feel that in my bones, honestly. And that universal struggle is the exact reason we are jumping into our sources for this deep dive today.
You've got some great material for this one.
We really do. We're exploring a highly practical guide published by Mrs. Kleenmaal. And this guide is aimed specifically at households, particularly for those of you across the Greater Toronto Area that use professional cleaning services on a regular rotation.
Right, so usually every 2 to 4 weeks.
Exactly. And the mission of our deep dive today isn't to figure out how to drive yourself crazy, keeping your home spotless every single day of the month.
Which is a huge relief, honestly, because aiming for spotless every single day is just a recipe for burnout for anyone with, a full-time job or a family.
Total burnout. It's just not sustainable. The goal here is what the source material calls maintenance between services.
Maintenance. I like that word.
Yeah, it's about preventing that compounding, overwhelming chaos that happens when you do absolutely nothing until the morning the cleaner is scheduled to arrive.
Oh, the panic clean. We've all been there.
The dreaded panic clean. I was reading through this guide, and it struck me that hiring a professional cleaner is remarkably similar to going to the dentist for a deep cleaning.
Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it.
Right? Like you sit in that chair every 6 months. And the hygienist uses those specialized ultrasonic tools to blast away the tartar and get everything perfectly polished.
Right, doing the heavy lifting.
But you still have to brush your teeth every single day between those visits. If you don't do the daily brushing, you show up at the dentist and they have to spend your entire appointment aggressively scraping away surface plaque.
Which nobody wants.
Exactly. They never actually get to polish your smile or do the deeper preventative work because they are too busy dealing with your daily neglect.
That analogy perfectly captures the mechanics of this guide. And what stands out in the Mrs. Kleenmaal approach is that these routines are explicitly designed for busy, exhausted people.
Yes, very exhausted people.
Right. The focus isn't on coming home after a terrible commute on the Don Valley Parkway and launching into an exhausting, hour-long, deep clean.
Because who has the energy for
Yeah,
that?
nobody. So it is on highly targeted, low-effort maintenance. It's about understanding the specific small daily habits that prevent the kind of rapid buildup that makes a home look instantly disastrous.
But to fix a messy house, we first have to understand why it looks messy to our brains in the first place.
That's a crucial point.
And spoiler alert for you listening, the source reveals that it is usually not actual dirt causing your stress.
No, it's really not. This is a massive paradigm shift in the source material, and it completely changes how you look at your living space.
For sure.
A home that looks messy between professional cleans is usually suffering from a severe clutter problem, not a cleaning problem. We conflate the two constantly.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because my first instinct when I read that was to get a little defensive.
Naturally.
I thought, am I really just dealing with clutter, or is the guide giving me an excuse to ignore my sticky floors?
Right, like maybe it's both.
Exactly. But then I looked at the fascinating detail the source provides about how human visual processing works, specifically regarding laundry.
Oh, the laundry example is so good.
It really is. The guide notes that a pile of unfolded laundry creates a sense of visual chaos that is wildly out of proportion to its actual physical size.
It's so true.
Like leaving one single basket of clean unfolded laundry in the corner of a bedroom basically ruins the aesthetic of the entire space.
It destroys the aesthetic entirely. And it really comes down to cognitive load.
Cognitive load.
Yeah, so unfolded clothes are essentially a chaotic mass of irregular shapes, varying colors, and tangled fabrics. There are no straight lines.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Visually, your brain interprets that lack of structure as noise or disorder. It's stressful to look at.
Wow, I never thought of it like that.
Right. But when you take those exact same clothes and fold them or put them on hangers, you are physically manipulating them into organized geometric shapes. You know, squares, rectangles, vertical lines.
So you're creating order out of the chaos.
Precisely. The brain recognizes geometry as intentional and tidy. You haven't removed a single particle of dirt or dust from that room. You have simply organized the visual noise, and suddenly the room feels calm again.
It's essentially visual camouflage.
Yeah.
The clutter tricks our brains into thinking the house is fundamentally dirty.
100%.
And the guide points out a very specific culprit for this visual noise flat surfaces.
Oh, the flat surfaces. The worst offenders.
Kitchen counters, dining tables, the tops of bedroom dressers, the entryway console table. They act like magnets for items that simply do not belong there.
They are the ultimate convenient drop zones. I mean, you walk through the door holding your car keys, the mail, maybe a flyer for a local pizza place, and a random receipt.
Always a random receipt.
Always. Your brain is just looking for the fastest way to empty your hands, and that wide-open dining table just invites you to dump everything.
Well, yeah, it does.
So, the solution the guide proposes to combat this feeling of a dirty house isn't to pull out the heavy-duty degreasers and start scrubbing.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, it's a simple daily 2-minute pass to clear those flat surfaces. You just grab the rogue items, the mail, the Amazon packages, the stray socks, and relocate them.
2 minutes. That's it.
That's it. Doing this one thing, especially in the high traffic common areas of your main living spaces, makes a home look dramatically tidier. And that's completely, regardless of whether the floors haven't been mopped in a week.
It just lowers the temperature of the room immediately. But, you know, once we strip away that clutter camouflage from our counters and tables, we do eventually have to tackle the actual physical grime.
Sadly, yes.
The challenge is doing that without letting it consume our scarce free time.
And that is where the concept of reflexive habits comes into play. The key to managing actual grime, according to the source, isn't blocking out your entire Saturday morning for a dreaded cleaning routine.
Which nobody wants to do.
Right. It is about building micro actions that stop messes from compounding into major projects.
When the guide listed these reflexive habits, the time frames absolutely blew my mind.
They are shockingly short.
We are talking about wiping the bathroom sink and the faucet immediately after your morning routine. The source claims this takes just 10 seconds.
Just 10 seconds.
And having timed it myself, it really is 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But it prevents that awful, hardened toothpaste splatter and sticky hair product buildup that eventually turns to concrete and requires serious elbow grease to chip away.
The kitchen equivalent is wiping the counter after every single use, which takes roughly 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Yeah, and that prevents moisture, dried food, and cooking oils from cementing themselves to your stone or laminate surfaces.
Makes total sense.
The guide also emphasizes putting things back where they came from immediately after use to fight that flat surface clutter we just discussed.
Right.
And regarding the laundry chaos, the reflexive habit is incredibly strict. You do one load of laundry from start to finish.
Emphasizing the word finish.
Yes.
You cannot just leave it abandoning hope in the dryer or sitting in the basket at the foot of the bed. The cycle is not legally complete until the clothes are folded and in the drawer or hanging in the closet.
Exactly. Because if it is in the basket, it is still visual noise.
Yep.
And finally, there is a habit that heavily influences your mental state, which is running the dishwasher before bed rather than waiting for the morning.
Oh, this is a big one.
Huge. Waking up to a clean, empty kitchen sink completely changes the emotional tone of your entire day. You start your morning at zero rather than starting your day already in a deficit.
It is the ultimate gift to your future self.
Hmm.
But, like, here's the thing I kept bumping up against reading this.
What's that?
10 seconds for the bathroom sink. 30 seconds for the kitchen counter. Less than a minute of our entire day. Logically, it is nothing.
Right. It's barely any time at all.
Yet I know for a fact I still resist doing it.
Hmm.
I will stare at the toothpaste splatter in the sink, know it takes 10 seconds to wipe, and still just walk out of the bathroom. Why is our resistance so high for something so brief?
What's fascinating here is how this behavior perfectly illustrates the psychological concept of friction.
Friction, okay.
Human behavior is heavily dictated by the path of least resistance. If completing a task requires multiple steps of preparation, even if the actual task itself is incredibly short, our brains will categorize it as too much effort and we will procrastinate.
That is so true.
And the guide includes a brilliant pro tip that directly neutralizes this friction.
The localized cleaning caddy.
Yes, the localized caddy. The trick is to abandon the idea of a central supply closet.
Which is how most of us do it.
Right. Instead, you keep a small, dedicated cleaning caddy under each bathroom sink in the house. Under every single sink, you store a spray bottle of all-purpose cleaner and two microfiber cloths.
That makes perfect sense. If I am staring at the toothpaste splatter and the cloth is literally 6 inches away from my knee, the 10-second wipe is effortless. The friction is zero.
Exactly.
But if I have to walk down the hallway, open the linen closet, dig behind the spare towels to find the spray bottle, find a clean rag, walk all the way back to the bathroom, do the 10-second wipe, and then walk back to put the supplies away.
You have just turned a 10-second reflex into a 3-minute multi-step chore.
Yep.
You added massive friction.
Yeah.
So your brain calculates the energy expenditure, decides it isn't worth it, and you think, I'll just let the professional cleaner handle it next week.
And then go back to our dentist analogy. The cleaner spends 15 minutes aggressively scrubbing hardened toothpaste concrete.
Yep.
Instead of actually sanitizing your shower grout.
Right.
So establishing these low-friction habits is great for the general house. But the guide makes it clear that two specific rooms are the undisputed front lines in the war against crime.
Ground zero is without question the kitchen and the bathroom. The kitchen deteriorates the fastest of any room in the house, which makes physiological sense when you think about it.
It is a high-traffic laboratory. You have raw biological matter, intense heat, aerosolized grease, standing water, and constant physical interaction from everyone in the house.
It is a perfect storm for biological and chemical messes.
Totally.
So the guide outlines a few critical interventions to keep this space from devolving between professional cleans. First, empty the garbage bin before it physically overflows.
So do not wait until you are playing a delicate game of Jenga with an empty cereal box and a banana peel.
Exactly. We've all played garbage Jenga. Second, clean the sink basin every few days with dish soap and a scrub brush. It takes 2 minutes. But the kitchen sink drain is one of the highest concentrations of bacteria in your entire home.
Gross.
Yeah, if you don't scrub it, a literal biofilm develops.
Okay, noting that down. Scrub the sink.
And third, wipe the microwave interior immediately if a sauce or soup splatters.
Because if you catch it fresh, that tomato sauce splatter wipes off with one swipe of a paper towel.
Right, it's so easy.
But if you let it sit, the next time you use a microwave, you are essentially baking that sauce onto the plastic walls.
Yeah.
Do that 3 times, and you need a chisel to get it off.
You really do.
But here's where it gets really interesting. The guide points out a kitchen detail that is a complete blind spot for me: wiping down the cabinet handles once a week.
Oh, the sticky handle phenomena. It is a universal kitchen problem.
It really is. The source explicitly calls out that cabinet pulls and fridge handles get sticky faster than almost any other surface.
Yeah.
And the irony is just brilliant. The fixtures we physically touch the most, often with hands covered in food oils or garlic, are the exact things we completely forget to clean. We wipe down the beautiful quartz countertops religiously, but we entirely ignore the handle we just grabbed to pull out the cutting board.
It's so funny how that works. And the science behind that stickiness is a combination of transferred food oils from your skin mixing with ambient dust in the air. It creates a literal adhesive.
It's basically glue.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Now, speaking of kitchen science, I noticed the guide has a very specific, almost rigid rule for the stovetop. It insists that you must wipe the stovetop down while it is still slightly warm.
This is a great tip.
I always assumed you should let it cool completely so you don't melt your sponge or, you know, burn your hand.
Yeah.
Why the urgency to do it warm?
It all comes down to the physics and state of matter of cooking grease. When grease or oil is warm, it remains in a highly viscous liquid state.
Okay.
The molecular bonds haven't tightened, meaning it hasn't anchored itself to the glass or metal surface of your stove. A simple damp cloth can easily break the surface tension and lift it away.
Oh, wow.
But as that grease cools down to room temperature, it undergoes a process called polymerization.
Polymerization.
Yeah, it hardens and literally bonds to the surface at a molecular level. Trying to clean cold, polymerized grease requires harsh chemical degreasers, heavy abrasive scrubbing, and significantly more time.
That sounds awful.
It is. By wiping it while it's warm, you are using the residual thermal energy of the stove to do the heavy lifting for you.
That is the ultimate work smarter, not harder tip.
Yeah.
Let the physics handle the heavy labor.
Exactly.
And that philosophy of letting the elements do the work transitions perfectly into the bathroom strategy.
Yeah.
Because the bathroom advice is entirely about letting chemicals handle the heavy lifting while you just walk away.
Precisely. The bathroom battle is about moisture management and chemical dwell time.
Dwell time.
Right. For the toilet, the guide suggests maintaining a baseline of freshness by squirting a bowl cleaner under the rim daily or every other day. But the most crucial note from the source is what you don't do. Do not use the toilet brush.
Wait, you just squirt the gel in and leave the room?
You literally just walk away.
That feels wrong somehow.
I know, but those toilet cleaners are formulated with active enzymes and chemical agents designed to break down hard water minerals and bacteria. They need time to work.
Ah, the dwell time.
Exactly. By letting it sit, the chemical agents do the scrubbing for you, maintaining a hygienic baseline without any physical exertion on your part.
I love that.
Then, for the bathroom sink encounter, you utilize that low-friction caddy you hid underneath for a quick wipe a few times a week.
Right, the 10-second reflex.
Yep. And the final piece of bathroom advice, squeegee, the shower door or the tile walls immediately after each use.
I will admit, grabbing a squeegee while I am dripping wet feels like the one habit that requires a genuine level of discipline.
It definitely does require discipline, but the payoff is massive.
How so?
When water droplets dry on glass or tile, they leave behind dissolved calcium and magnesium. Over time, these hard water minerals literally etch into the porous surface of the glass.
Etch into it.
Yeah. Once glass is etched by hard water, even a professional cleaner using industrial acids struggles to restore it to clear. The squeegee removes the water before the minerals can bond.
Okay, so we have conquered the counters, the sinks, the showers, and the stovetops. The flat surfaces are beautifully decluttered, but what about the surfaces we are constantly walking all over?
The floors.
Yes, the floors. Mm. And more importantly, I kept asking myself this while reading, if I am putting in all this daily prep work, why am I paying a professional to come to my house?
That's a big question. Let's tackle the floor strategy first, because it is far less demanding than people assume.
Okay.
The floor maintenance outlined in the guide is surprisingly minimalist. For a typical 2 or 3 bedroom home, the recommendation is simply to vacuum the main high traffic living areas just twice a week.
So not the whole house.
No, we are talking about the entryway, the kitchen floor where crumbs drop, the main living room, and the connecting hallways. In an average GTA home, that takes maybe 15 to 20 minutes tops.
And we just completely ignore the bedrooms.
Yeah, unless you have, like, a golden retriever shedding everywhere, yes.
Good to know.
The source says bedroom floors see very little actual dirt traffic, so they can absolutely wait until the professional service arrives. You can literally just shut the bedroom door and forget about the floor.
I can definitely do that.
And for the hard surfaces in the kitchen and bathroom, a quick sweep with a dry microfiber mop every few days captures the dust and hair.
Okay, so to summarize the physical labor, 15 to 20 minutes of vacuuming twice a week, 10 seconds wiping a sink here, 30 seconds wiping a counter there.
Right.
So what does this all mean? I found the answer in the guide's Did You Know section, and it completely reframed my understanding of hiring health.
It's a great stat.
It really is. The guide states that professional cleaners consistently report that homes where residents maintain these small daily wipe downs take 30 to 40% less time to clean during a scheduled service visit.
Which is wild.
30 to 40%. That is a massive chunk of time.
It is a staggering amount of time to reclaim during a 2 or 3 hour booking.
And it completely clicked for me. If I am doing the 10 second sink wipe and managing my dining table drop zone, the cleaner saves 30% of their time. Because they aren't tidying up my mail or scrubbing toothpaste concrete.
Exactly.
But they aren't leaving your house early. They are reallocating that saved time to the serious deep cleaning tasks.
Right. The stuff you really don't want to do.
Yes. They are finally able to scrub the baseboards. They are getting behind the heavy appliances. They are detailing the grout with a toothbrush. They are dusting the tops of the ceiling fan blade.
The grueling stuff.
Exactly. They are doing the meticulous work that I absolutely do not want to do.
That is exactly the dynamic. You are freeing them up from surface level tidying so they can deploy their professional skills, specialized tools, and industrial products on the heavy duty tasks that actually preserve the value of your home.
It makes so much sense. And it beautifully addresses something I saw in the People Often Ask section of the source material. It tackles this universal, deeply ingrained guilt we all seem to carry.
Ah, the urge to clean before the cleaner arrives.
Yes. You know the feeling. It is 10 p.m. the night before the cleaners come, and you are panic scrubbing the guest bathroom toilet because you are terrified the professional is going to judge you.
The notorious pre-clean panic. It is completely wasted energy.
Completely wasted. The source addresses this head on. When asked what you should physically do before your cleaner arrives, the answer is delightfully simple. Not much.
Keep it simple.
Right. The guide instructs you to simply clear your personal items from the surfaces so the cleaner can physically access them. Put away your dishes so the sink is empty. Secure any sensitive valuables. And that is it.
That's really it.
The guide explicitly commands the reader, do not pre-clean the grime. You are literally paying them to remove the grime.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this entire guide is a masterclass in efficiency and maximizing your financial investment.
Oh, absolutely.
By adopting these low-friction micro-habits, the 10-second wipes, the quick squeegee, letting the dishwasher run overnight, you are simply holding a baseline of hygiene by managing the visual clutter. You are ensuring the professional cleaner has immediate access to the surfaces they need to treat. You aren't doing their job for them. You are optimizing the environment.
Optimizing, I like that.
You are setting the stage so the professional you hired can give you the maximum possible return on the money you are spending.
It truly is the ultimate life hack for home maintenance. So let's recap the journey we've been on through this Mrs. Clean Mole guide. We learned that the visual chaos that spikes our cortisol is mostly just clutter and geometrically offensive, unfolded laundry, not actual dirt.
Which is such a relief.
It really is. We discover the incredible power of 10-second reflexive habits and how deploying a simple cleaning caddy under every sink destroys the friction that leads to procrastination.
Zero friction is the goal.
Exactly. We unlock the physics of utilizing a warm stovetop to fight grease, realize the sticky irony of our kitchen cabinet handles, and discover that doing bare minimum surface maintenance saves our cleaners up to 40% of their time, which unlocks the meticulous deep clean we're actually paying for.
It's a win-win.
It really is. And for you listening right now, remember that the goal isn't absolute perfection. You don't have to overhaul your entire life tomorrow. Just try one thing.
Start small.
Exactly. Oh. Take a spray bottle of all-purpose cleaner and a microfiber cloth and put it under your most used bathroom sink tonight. Just leave it there. Tomorrow morning, see if that 10-second reflex naturally kicks in when the supplies are right at your fingertips.
I bet it will.
I bet it will too.
Yeah.
Now, I want to turn it over to you for one final thought on all of this, specifically regarding the guide's seemingly simple advice to just put things back where they came from.
Right. So that specific piece of advice actually kept me awake last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We established earlier that clutter is the primary reason a home feels visually stressful and that our flat surfaces, our tables and counters, act as magnetic drop zones for items that don't belong there.
The junk mail, the keys.
Exactly. But analyzing that put it back directive raises a much deeper, almost uncomfortable question about our modern lifestyles.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
If these items, the mail, the gadgets, the clothes, the random accessories, are constantly being left out on tables, do they actually have a designated place they belong?
Oh, wow.
Right. We might be diagnosing the wrong disease. Perhaps our biggest hurdle isn't a lack of wiping down counters or a failure of discipline. Maybe the real reason the visual chaos constantly builds up is that we simply own too many things that never had a home to be put back into in the first place.